This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, it's Tom Kui here, back for the final, yes, final edition of Live Fast, Die Ugly, the 100 Reasons podcast. And up top, I just want to thank again all the great guests on the show. We've had 8 total, that being the core 4, of course, of Colin, Larry, Andy Buse and the Andy, plus Blair, Rad and Alan. And altogether, crazily, the podcast, when all the episodes are added together, is more than 7 hours. And it really wouldn't be anything without those fantastic people being such terrific, insightful interviews. And at the time of this episode being released, the band's live shows are tantalisingly close, so be sure to grab your ticket. We've got Leeds on Thursday the 23rd of February, Glasgow the 24th and Manchester the 25th. And then the following week, there is Bristol on Thursday the 2nd of March, which is sold out already. Friday the 3rd of March is in Birmingham, where I myself will be in attendance. And now, this is very important, Saturday the 4th of March, that was at Brixton, but unfortunately that has had to be moved, but thankfully not postponed. So it was in Brixton Academy, but now it's happening at the Eventim Apollo in Hammersmith. All the tickets remaining are valid and new tickets are now available too. So keep that in mind if you're planning on attending that London gig like I am myself. So yeah, support the band as ever. Stream the music, pre-order the album, grab some tickets and all that good stuff. And there is a new song out from Glorious Sunset just as this episode drops. And let's have a listen. It's called So So Soon. And if you've enjoyed my work on the show and want to hear more, be it my Metallica podcast, my battle rap interviews, my deep dive celebration of the Royal Family TV show, check out tomkwei.com. That's TOMKWEI.com. We'll put all the links down below. Anywho, where were we? Well, in the last episode, we were covering everything about the 4th album. And now we're looking past that and looking towards the future right up until the modern day. So we'll begin with Larry, who's discussing the new era of music that the band were entering post Quick the Word, Sharp the Action, and how 100 Reasons progressed from then up until right now. For the triumphant return, which we'll get to, like, you know, how was the kind of aftermath of, I don't want to say running out of steam, but maybe running out of road a little bit. There were, you know, it was like an era of Gallows and Enter Shikari and Bring Me the Horizon, and it was a different time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. In fact, we went on tour with Enter Shikari around that time because they were all big fans of the band and had the same agent, Rad, and we still do. And I remember them offering us the tour, and they were like, do you want to come on tour with Enter Shikari? And we were like, no, their crowd will hate us. nothing against those guys, but no, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think they just offered us enough money that we were like, all right, you know, Like, they maybe offered us a couple of grand a night or something so we would actually make some money as a support band, which is unheard of. So we were like, all right, we'll do it. And then we did it, and it was terrible. Like, which has got nothing to do with them because they're the nicest guys. But speaking about, like, meatheads in white trainers and bomber jackets coming to your gigs, their crowd were fucking moronic at that time. They were literally the dickheads you see in town that will kick the shit out of you for being a rocker. They were, like, their crowd were idiots. And we just, they hated us. Because we were like their uncle's mates to them. Do you know what I mean? They were like, what are these fucking AC/DC looking dickheads doing on stage? We just want to throw glow sticks at each other. It was a terrible idea and a terrible match. Like, we were just having shit thrown at us. Nobody cared we were there. Everyone was just waiting for the Shikari. But, you know, Shikari guys, love them. Brilliant. Thank you for the tour. But fuck me, not our best. Not our best time out.
So, you know, how did it kind of dry up and end then? Was there like a proper band meeting, or was it just kind of felt natural to just conclude at a certain point?
No, I can't even remember. It just sort of slowed down to the point we weren't doing anything anymore and everyone went off and to do other things. And, you know, then at some point, the gig offers just stopped coming in, and then everyone was just off doing their own thing. I remember there was one point where we sort of kept a big yellow storage lockup going for a while, which is where our shit was.
Yeah.
I remember there was one point that we finally, you know, this thing was costing us a few hundred quid a month, and at some point it was like, well, there's no money left to pay for this. So we had to go and sort of break that up and move it to various sort of places of people's houses, and that felt like the kind of end for me that weekend where we did that. That was okay, right, well, there's now no... That was the only thing that could have resembled a headquarters, and that's now done. So that probably felt like the end point to me, was disbanding the lockup. Something so, you know, normal and mundane spelled the end of the band.
Yeah. If only the Twickenham studios were still available, maybe you could have commandeered them.
Yeah, maybe it's still going. Who knows?
And then, I mean, yourself, obviously you're now in production full time and working with some incredible bands, and that just grew out of this kind of disbandment, did it? That kind of moved on from that?
It did. It was something I really desperately wanted to do once the band ended, although I don't think I'd really got myself into a position where I could do it at that point. So I started getting into producing bands immediately after 100 Reasons ended. But it was probably just a bit too soon for me afterwards. Like, nothing really stuck. I made a few records, but it wasn't really going anywhere. It certainly wasn't paying me enough money. So I started at that point doing live sound for bands, which I found myself to be quite good at. So I was out doing front of house for bands on tour. I did a few gigs with Hardfire. Remember them? Like, it was in Japanese.
Of course, Hardfire. Yeah. Stars of CCTV. Yeah.
Stars of CCTV. So I did that. But after a few years, by the time I finished doing front of house, I was doing Lana Del Rey, fucking Australia and China tour, and some quite decent stuff.
Yeah.
But generally found it to be a little bit unsatisfying. And, you know, that was probably the time in my life where the band had just ended. I wasn't feeling great about that. I was on tour doing live sound. I was surrounded by people who were at, let's say, a more optimistic point in their career, and was finding that quite hard to deal with. So, you know, I was earning better money than I ever had when I was in the band by being out on tour. I was meeting really good people, having a good time, but was generally a little bit unsatisfied with the whole thing.
Yeah.
And really, really wanted to get back into producing records. So, after a few years ago, I just basically quit, started saying no to gigs, which is a very, very difficult thing to do when you're self-employed. Went back to earning no money for a year or so, and sort of threw myself headfirst into the producing, and that was probably 10 or 11 years ago now, maybe a bit more, and thankfully this time it stuck, which is great.
And what about the future of the band then, 100 Reasons? Like, I mean, I know you guys regrouped and, you know, have even been writing new material. Obviously, we've got the tour on the horizon as well. Like,
yeah,
how did that happen? Was it like just a, you know, simple text, or obviously you guys were still kind of cordial, I suppose. Like,
yeah, we're still cordial. I mean, we don't like hang out, but you know, and Colin and the Andy carried on doing their acoustic gig thing.
Yes,
when we weren't doing anything, I've always been the. Well, me and Andy Buse have generally been the naysayers when things get offered. I mean, Andy, because he lives in America and just, you know, he's a bit removed from the rest of us anyway. And me, just because, you know, I don't want to do 100 Reasons stuff unless it's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not like, you know, I'm fair play to them for doing acoustics and stuff like that, but that's not me. That's not what I'm going to do. So, you know, I want to do it if we're doing a tour and doing something cool and there's going to be loads of people there. That's the marker for me. So there was a bit of talk around doing just a solitary gig at Brixton Academy. This is a few years ago now because of COVID and whatever. So and I know Colin was talking to the agent about it, and then I got wind of it somehow. I think maybe Colin even got to me. I can't remember. And I was like, well, are we going to do one gig? And then we just started talking about it, and then it spiraled into doing more than one gig, doing a tour. Then it was just like, well, if we're going to do it, we need to have a reason to do it. So why don't we try and work on some new material? And that very quickly spiraled into making a record, which I don't think I was really expecting was going to happen, to be honest. Because it's been so long since you tried to make any music, and I've always been quite daunted by the prospect of making a 100 Reasons record because I know how much work goes into it. So we just started doing a few tentative evening writing sessions because obviously, you know, like we're all older now. We've got our own jobs and Colin and Andy have got kids and, you know, time is more precious when you're in your 40s. So we just do these little writing sessions where Colin would come to my studio in Brixton maybe once or twice a week at points, or maybe even just once or twice a month, but he'd come over for these little evening writing sessions and we'd be there for probably 2 or 3 hours at a time, and in those two or three hours we would attempt to write a song basically in its entirety. And most of the time we would manage it, we would come up with a song, or at least something, you know, the form of a song, or most of the idea, or something that without too much work could be complete. And what I loved about that, in stark contrast to the sort of mess that was the creative process of our fourth album, it brought the instant feel back to everything. It brought instincts back in. It brought things being quick and having purpose. And we basically would write a song every time we got together for 2 hours. And if it was shit, we'd just trash it. And if it was good, it made the record. And we didn't dwell on anything for too long, which is how creatively we were always at our best. And so in that way, even without really realizing it, we wrote nearly 20 songs in probably over about a 6 month period. And you know, half of them have gone directly in the shredder where they belong, but what we ended up with was 10 really, really strong tracks which we've made a record with, which is one of my favorite albums we've ever made. Which is not something I was ever expecting to say about a new 100 Reasons album.
I'm so hyped to hear it. And you know, how are you guys feeling about the tour itself, like going on a fully fledged jaunt that was delayed but you know is now imminent-ish?
Well, when's this coming out, by the way?
I probably closer to the tour, to be honest with you, so not for a little while.
Okay. Well, the tour is still happening and it's still moving, but I've thrown a spanner in the works by the fact that me and my girlfriend are expecting a baby.
Oh, congrats.
And thank you very much, but we're expecting it on the 17th of February, which until now was going to be the first date of the tour. So we're moving the first two dates, I think, just to afterwards. We're keeping most of it the same. So yes, it is still going to happen though. So yeah, my feelings about the tour have been mixed up in that a little bit recently. But I'm like, am I excited about the tour? Yes, I am excited about the tour. I'm not prepared for it yet, let's say, but I will be nearer the time. It's something I've been making the record. I've been worrying about that. The tour is like the next thing I worry about, and I'm probably not going to start worrying about that for another month. But we are starting to talk about the production and everything. I just need to get on with learning the songs. But yeah, I am excited for it. I'm excited to be doing it at Heads for Heroes. I'm excited to be doing Brixton again. I feel that when we did Brixton Academy last time, we were like rabbits stuck in headlights. I think we were terrified of the occasion, and I don't think any of us enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to doing that and enjoying it, because we will enjoy it this time. So that's going to be really good. That's all I can really think about it for now. I don't know if we're going to play any new songs. I don't know what the set's going to be. We have started talking about it, and I guess we'll call it nearer the time. I guess we'll see how the new stuff goes down, because we would like to play new stuff, but we also very, very much realise what people are there to see and what people have paid their money to see, and it's not new songs. What I want it to be is a celebration of everything that we've done, weighted in favour of the stuff that's popular. But it needs to be a celebration. And possibly a good send-off, because I'm pretty sure we won't do something like this again.
Well, I'm going to be there, and I live in Birmingham, and thankfully the Birmingham show is actually on a Friday. So
you've noticed they're all on weekends.
Oh, they are, of course. I didn't even. Yes, classic returning band. Yeah, I see that. Yeah,
classic returning band. Yeah, we've all got jobs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're going to find it harder to sell tickets on a Monday. So
yeah, yeah.
That's just 3 heads in a row.
No. Fair enough.
Andy Buse now giving his thoughts on the band wrapping up and their triumphant return.
After the fourth record, then scenes were changing and, you know, tastes were shifting and priorities were differing. How do you remember the band sort of coming to a close? Because obviously it didn't really end in some sort of, you know, grand dramatic fashion. It just seemed to have kind of spooled out, I guess, naturally.
It did. If memory serves me correctly, we kind of fizzled out, actually. We sort of... The fourth album as a whole was a little bit of a I don't know, it was a little bit of a downer, really. And I think by the time we'd done that and it had been released and we'd done a tour and we'd gone to Japan, we'd come back, we'd done a few things with other bands, I think it just kind of, everything had lost its appeal, I think, at that point. And I just don't think I don't think any of us particularly wanted to be in the band anymore. Other members of the band may say differently to that, but I think that it just got to a point where we weren't really doing it anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Our hearts weren't in it, I suppose. And I think our attentions had gone on to other things. All of us had drifted in separate places, and so I think it just kind of fizzled out, really. There was no point in it where we were kind of, you know, we didn't have a massive argument and then that was it and we all walked off. Nothing like that happened. I think we literally just stopped rehearsing and then I think we just stopped playing gigs and that was it. And we kind of just went off and we sort of ceased to exist. And it was kind of strange, really. I don't remember any particular point in which we sort of sat there and said, right, well, let's not be a band anymore. I don't think it actually happened. And we did have these little, I mean, that would have been late 2007, I suppose, early 2008, I suppose, where we would have done a tour and that would have been it. And then we would have gone off and done other stuff. You know, I think we all stayed within the music industry, but we just went off and worked in different places, did different things. And I think we came back and did maybe one more tour, just a little tour of the UK. And then I think after that, that was that. And I don't think we really even spoke about the band for a good few years after that. I mean, we were still friends. I mean, I used to hang out with Lance all the time in London. We lived in London, so we'd always hang out and we'd always talk. And the Andy went off to he was in a few bands, I think. He's one of those people that he's brilliant. and he just couldn't play in any band, and he does so. You know,
I mean, Freeze the Atlantic and then Raging Speedhorn, crazy outfits. And it's kind of credit to you guys, isn't it, that all four of you post the band went on to really interesting stuff. Like, you know, I spoke to the guys individually about this, but like we just mentioned Andy and then Larry in production and then Colin moving more into kind of academic, you know, music industry kind of circles, which is great. And let's just talk about yourself briefly, because you moved more into the live industry game. Is that right?
I did. You know what? After we'd finished, I did feel a little bit lost for a moment, because we'd spent, I guess, the best part of 10 years being in a band, and you're kind of, it's all consuming, really. You kind of, you know, you're just, that's what you're doing. And so I remember thinking to myself, well, what am I going to do now? I suppose I would have been about 27 at the time, or 28, something like that. And a friend of mine actually just suggested, why don't I become a drum tech? Since I know about drums, you know, I've been playing drums forever and I knew how to tune them and things like that. And I think within about a month, I was on a tour as a drum tech. And it was as quick as that, really. I think someone said, well, this band needs a drum tech and you get paid and, you know, you have to set up the drums and tune them and clean them and stuff. And I sort of thinking, wow, you know, I could do that. And I really enjoyed it. And I went on from there. I drum teched for quite a few bands. I went on from there to be, I went into set carpentry. So I started building set for bands, and from there I went on to show calling, you know, bit of stage managing, just all sorts of things, really. I'm very, very fortunate that being in 100 Reasons, it was almost like kind of setting up for what came afterwards. You know, when you're in a band, you make a lot of contacts, and so I went to behind the scenes of the music industry, and I'm still there to this day. I still go and work for bands, and I really enjoy being this side of it. You know, there's a different set of pressures involved, but it's really nice to still be involved in music and still be involved in the live arena, as it were.
And with artists such as Queen, right?
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to work with Queen. Yeah. how did you know that?
Just a little bit crafty googling around, but I mean, you know, I think, who else have you worked with, if you don't mind me asking, because I know there's like a gallery of stars there.
Yeah, I've done a lot of work for I've worked for Pearl Jam, Calvin Harris, actually, the DJ.
Yeah,
I've built some of his DJ risers, which is cool. I've done some stuff with all sorts of artists. Look, I can't even remember now, there's so many.
Yeah.
But it's really nice. You know, actually, one of my most fond memories is, you know, the band The Kooks.
Yes, of course.
So I was a drum tech for The Kooks as they were kind of climbing the ladder to stardom. And that was actually really lovely, because they'd released their first record and they were kind of going to release their second record, and I became their drum tech. And watching them do kind of what we'd done 10 years earlier, or longer, was actually really nice, because they went from playing kind of smaller clubs to playing really big venues, and they were kind of like really enjoying themselves, and it was nice to see it from a different point of view, from sitting behind the drums as opposed to on the drums, and that's kind of nice. And I think that going on from there, working with sort of huge arena bands, I worked with Muse for a bit as well. Muse obviously were old friends of ours, so that was quite nice.
Yeah, you beat them at the Kerrang Awards way back when, yeah.
Yeah, they went on to do some good things.
Yeah, yeah, a little.
Yeah, so I did some work with them, and I just love being in music. I think ever since, like I said, I walked into Wembley Stadium on that day in 1992, I knew that I just wanted to be involved in music any which way I could be. I knew that was for me. And so even doing the work I do now behind the scenes is just as rewarding as it is being on the drum set and playing in front of all those people. I still love building shows for people, and I just love the industry. I just love music. You know, it's a part of me. I think it's just who I am. I think there's a lot of people like that, and I'm very fortunate to be able to be working in music still after all these years, 22 years or something, being touring. That's great. Yeah, very thankful for that.
And of course, you know, the band are set to return. We've got the new record as well in the pipeline.
Like, really exciting.
And like, how did that happen from your point of view? Like, how did that all come together?
It's quite funny. So we've always been buddies, you know, we've always talked. I can't remember exactly how it happened now, but during lockdown, we sort of started all talking on Zoom as buddies, like we do. And I think that someone had said, my memory is so foggy with this, but we were going to do some sort of tour. Like, I think Colin had brought that to the plate, like, what, let's do a tour in like next year or whatever. This is before lockdown. And I think we all thought, yeah, that'd be fun. Let's do a tour. We haven't done anything for a while. And then lockdown happened. And I think that then Colin and Larry maybe started talking about writing some new songs. And I think they had a jam one night and came up with a song and sent it to me and Andy. And it was really good. And I was sort of thinking, wow, yeah, this is actually quite good. So then we sort of discussed via a Zoom call, like, should we try and write some more music? Because we didn't really have any thoughts beforehand on writing new music together. That wasn't a plan. And it became a plan because they all started jamming over there. I live miles away now. So I wasn't right there in London. So what they were doing is they were writing and sending me what they'd come up with, like these little kind of really rough demos. And I have a drum set at my house and I'd kind of just play what I thought would be good for it and then send it back and blah, blah, blah. And we started, I was amazed on how good it was, having not written anything in, 15, maybe 16 years. These new songs, they sounded so fresh. To me, it sounded really 100 Reasons, because it does sound like 100 Reasons because Colin's singing, you know, Larry's playing guitar and he's playing bass. So that's, you know, that's the, it kind of just sounded like 100 Reasons to me, but it sounded like a fresher version. And I sort of became really excited about it. I was thinking, this is great. You know, maybe we should do something here. And as the songs progressed and they started building and we started doing better demos, it became a sure thing. You know, we were talking to our management and we were sort of like, yeah, I think we're going to do a record. Let's do a record. And that's how it came about. As far as I was concerned, it was almost a not planned thing that just came about, and now we're very pleased that it did, because it's really exciting now. And I think we've written genuinely a very, very good record, and I'm very proud of it. I think we're all very proud of it, and we're really excited to release new music and really excited to get back out there and do some touring. And after all these years.
Well, yeah, and we haven't really touched on this properly yet, but we mentioned this to other people. You are obviously overseas. You're in America. You're recording this in America. So how is it working in terms of the rehearsals? We're recording this in kind of late November, so I'm guessing that's going to be happening soon, or?
Well, I have a drum room set up in my house over here. And so I basically sit there with headphones on, like I did when I very first started playing drums, drumming to that Nirvana Nevermind record. I'm doing that again, but with our own records. So it's gone full circle for me. I'm on my own in my drum room, rehearsing by myself to the songs, and then eventually I'll go over to the UK and we'll do a bunch of rehearsing with all of us together, and then we'll go out there. Yeah, so I there was a period of time. I mean, I didn't play drums for maybe, I would say like about 8 years, actually. I didn't even sit behind a drum set. And I've been, the last sort of year, I suppose the last 2 years, I've had a drum room set up and I've been playing around again. And I've kind of rediscovered my fondness for the drums, and I've really been enjoying it. So yeah, by the time the tour comes around, I'll be match fit.
And it's crazily been about, it's been more than 8 years since your last show, which is at Sonosphere. So yeah.
Well, I didn't play that show.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
No, my good friend Joe from Headers for Heroes stepped in and played a couple of gigs for me. That was quite a funny one, because we did these reunion, no, we did anniversary shows maybe 10 years ago, I suppose. We did the Forum and Manchester Academy and things like that. And that was the last gigs I played with 100 Reasons. And then I remember Larry phoning me up saying that they'd been offered Sonosphere and could I do it? And I couldn't do it. I had to go and do other things. And so, they asked if Joe could do it. And Joe's a fantastic drummer. He's brilliant. And so he phoned me up actually and was like, oh, do you mind? And I was like, mate, do it. You're great. You'll do a great job. Yeah. And we're very, very old friends. Joe and myself. So we go back a long way. So I was quite happy for him to sit there and play drums for me for a couple of gigs. And I hear he did a really good job. So there it is. Yeah, so that's good. But I'm glad to be playing these shows. And of course, like you said, it's My Vitriol and Headers for Heroes playing too. And we're all old buddies. So it's going to be so much fun.
Oh, it's a dream lineup, isn't it? For 100 Reasons fan, I mean, it is just like, kind of, you know, it's equivalent to like the GNR show that you went to. It's a similar sort of trivium of legends kind of coming together.
I guess if you were into sort of heavy guitar music in the early 2000s, this is the gig to be at. Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And let's hear from Rad now, speaking about the band's reunion from a management perspective.
You know, finally now, the band are obviously coming back, which is incredibly exciting. You know, how did that gestate on your end? Like,
well, you know, we'd done a kind of a sort of comeback tour previously. I mean, not, you know, but that was in 2012. Mm. And we put a run of dates together and we were doing the Forum in London. And when we got to the point of actually announcing the dates and the shows, it sold out so quickly. It sold out in, you know, I think in the space of about, you know, an hour, we'd sold all the tickets. Yeah. Which was a lot more of a, it was quicker than any of us anticipated. We then added a second night at the Coronet in South London because we couldn't get another night at the Forum, and that sold out too. So there was obviously a huge demand there. And it was great, and they were brilliant shows, really, really good. And so I think we, on this time round, we probably had a bit more of an inkling. Obviously, the time's gone as well. And as time's gone on, I think the band have become more important, and I think that the respect and legacy that's been left behind, and particularly for Ideas Above Our Station, has just kind of grown. And I think that so having a focus on that for doing more shows later on is great, because it gives you an opportunity for not just the people that saw them back in the day to be there, but new fans as well, and people that have discovered them, you know, as time's gone on. So I think with it, you know, for us, them having new material out, which is absolutely fantastic, really, really excited about that, and the shows, which are going to be absolutely brilliant, it's great. It's a really, really good time. So, yeah, feeling good.
I mean, obviously, unfortunate that there were slight delays with the touring and such, but that's just part and parcel of the modern world, I guess.
that's just what touring is these days. Instead of us, like, you know, strategizing and thinking about when we're going to do something and book a tour, what we do is now we book a tour and then we book a tour again, and we book the same tour 4 or 5 times in a row until we've just punched ourselves in the face repeatedly for 4 years. It's great fun.
And I mean, I know nothing's set in stone, really. And obviously, we've got this UK tour that we're building towards 2023. You know, if you listen to this, get your tickets if you haven't already. I certainly have. Like, is there scope, perhaps, to go overseas in the future? Because the 100 Reasons are popular in many territories.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, obviously, we, in terms of what you were saying about touring and the fact that this has been knocked on, that's relative, and it is a thing. It's like, you know, the costs of touring are somewhat higher. They're definitely there, and it's, you know, I think that there's scope for us to do some things overseas, definitely, but I think they would need to be cost effective, and, you know, so I think we just need to look into it. We had certain territories where the band were strong, but you know, and I think there's definitely scope for revisiting there. And I think there's an enthusiasm from the band as well. So I think we'll just take it a little bit day by day and just see how things develop. And as opportunities present themselves, if everyone can get themselves in order and feel like they want to do it, then great, we'll take it further. I mean, you know, to be coming back in and putting your flag in the ground and having a start point of being a sold out show at Brixton Academy for your London show, it's pretty fucking robust, honestly, and I think that's a good statement, and it puts you in a good stead. And if they want to do more, well, fuck it. Yep, let's do more.
The Andy now sharing his thoughts on projects after the band and the band themselves returning to the fold. You know, give me the broad strokes here. Like, how did the band start to sort of wind down after the fourth record? Because, you know, you kept going for a good time, and then it just kind of, you know, slowly stopped.
Well, it's funny enough. It was not too long. It was not too long after Quick the Word had actually come out that Lightning Striking Twice, our label got bought out by a bigger label. And so then that bigger label, what they did was they cherry picked all the biggest artists and then just fobbed off everybody else. So we found ourselves label-less again. And by that point, we literally is. I kind of think like all of us have got to a point where we're really like, you know what, sod it. I just want to try something. I want to do something else. So there was no like issues with any of the band members together or anything like that. Literally, I think we realized at that time is like, you know what, it's time to maybe do something else. Like, we went for a little bit longer. I think it was like 2009 was the last little tour that we did. And I was still, that was a hell of a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, but, you know, like it was kind of like you could feel it was a bit done by that point, really. So, yeah, we kind of just went off and did other things. And, you know, you still talk to each other all the time. So, and it's always lovely to, you know, I always loved seeing the guys and when I could and stuff like that. And I used to live a lot closer to Colin. And we'd see each other occasionally and stuff. So it's just one of those things. It kind of went out with a little bit like a whimper. Like, it was no crash bang wallop. It was a kind of like, I don't even feel like it even went out, really. The flame never fully went out.
Yeah.
It was like we never said, oh, I don't want to do this band anymore. It was more like it was like a unspoken thing where we're just going, well, let's just do some other, let's all just go do other things. You know, Larry had really got into his producing sort of thing, and, you know, had already produced a few records and was on his way to, you know, being like the big shot producer he is today. Colin went off and did some other stuff. Busey basically essentially walked straight off the road with us, I think, straight on to backline teching for other people.
Yeah.
Like, I think instantaneously, I think he did. So, and then I went off and started.
Freeze the Atlantic, right?
It was Freeze the Atlantic, yeah. It was with John and Guy from Ruben. So, Ruben had just split up at that time. So it was one of those sort of, oh, I know those guys. They're local to me. Why, you guys want to start something new? They're like, yeah, okay. So it was like, it was kind of more, not so much any kind of plan to do anything major. It was going back to the mentality of like, just want to be playing music. I just want to enjoy playing music. So we started doing, you know, that band, and, you know, I managed to get three very good records out of the, you know, that band. You know, we did 10 years and 3 albums, and I'm proud of all 3 of them. So, and they were different to what the 100 Reasons stuff is, and that's a good thing, because I think very much 100 Reasons is the sum of the parts, you know, of all four of us. So, yeah.
What sort of style? How would you compare the sound of the band to 100 Reasons in any way? Are there any sort of legacy there from that day? Or?
Well, obviously, like, because I always had my musical input to the band with 100 Reasons, and I did the same with Freezy Atlantic, although I had moved back to guitar for Freezy Atlantic. But I still, you know, when I wrote a lot of songs, I still did it on guitar, even with 100 Reasons. So there was definitely the element there of all the stuff that I brought to the table, you know. But it was definitely a different band, you know. Like, Guy is a very technical drummer and a lot, you know, he's quite... He can pull off some fancy stuff. So it's like there was, you know, stuff that we would not normally do that I would never have done with 100 Reasons, because Busey is very much more of the Dave Grohl sort of meat and potatoes, just solid as a rock sort of sort of drummer and
dependable.
All the better for it. But like, so him and Guy were like two completely different type of drummers. And like, it's amazing how much of a difference just having a different style of drummer makes to the sound of a whole band. But I was, you know, we did that for 10 years and I was really, really proud. Really proud of that. So.
And then Raging Speedhorn, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Who we didn't really mention on our little chat, but, you know, we're kind of very much in the same orbit as you guys, your same award ceremonies early on, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we met them really early on. They started like a year before us, really. And we'd crossed paths so many times. And it was like proper, like every time we saw each other, it was like, hey, and it was just like a good laugh.
Yeah.
Always hanging out. And just, we kind of, as bands, like we just got each other, you know, like we like both of us, you know, both bands like to drink, maybe not quite as much as Speedhorn, but like, you know, like we, you know, we like to have a good time, you know, as you do. Yeah. So it was quite funny. Like for me, it was like I just finished playing with Freezy Atlantic. And then you have that sort of sitting there going, so what am I going to do with myself now? You know, like, do I do it in this different band or do this? Like, I'm still, you know, I'm very much in the mentality I'm never going to stop playing music, you know, in some form or another. So you always got like thinking, what am I going to do next sort of thing? Yeah, both the guitar players of Raging Speedhorn quit roughly about the same time. Like, that's what, at the same time, roughly about that time. So, like, I talked to Gordon quite a lot, even before then, sort of the Gordon, the drummer. And I was there, said to him, oh, I mean, like, I just said, it's a shame about your guitar players. Like, I'd be stupid if I didn't sort of throw my keys into the bowl just to help you guys out. And, you know, being mates and stuff like that. And then he was like, oh, yeah, no, that'd be great. And then they did, it was an anniversary show, like 20 years of the band or something. And so they got me down and Frank, the singer, was just like, you're coming to join our band? You're going to be in a band? I was like, I'm going to help you guys out, I think. You know, like, just see how it goes sort of thing. And then the next thing I hear is that, oh, they did a post up. Oh, Jim, who was in the band but quit the band, has decided to come back. Or maybe his press gang things coming back again, but like either way, he's back in the band. And there's a guy called Dave that joined the band on guitar. So I was like straight away messaged Gordon saying, oh, I'm really glad you guys sorted out, all the best and stuff like that. And then about a week later, I get a text message of Gordon going, have you still got all your bass stuff? I was like, why? Because so, at the time I didn't realize that their bass player had also quit. So yeah, hilariously. So I started, originally put my name forward to help them out on guitar and ended up being helping them out on bass. And it's, I was always mentally like, I was like, I'm just going to help you guys out for a little bit, you know, just as a mate sort of thing. And then I remember the second gig we played, it was like Birmingham Academy for some festival. I can't remember who it was. Some festival was like really busy. Like, there's a main room in Birmingham Academy, really busy, crowd were going off. But halfway through the set, I went, oh, sod this. So I walked over to Frank, just went, I'm in. He's like, so there's actually video footage on YouTube where it's just like of that gig. You know, Frank, they just hear Frank going, he's in. He said he's in. He's in. So it was, So yeah, that's been interesting to be playing with them though. Although I very much come from like you know, back in the day I was all about pretty, you know, loud metal bands, you know, like it was all about metal. You know, I listened to nothing but death metal for about 2 years when I was a teenager. So you know, bands like Bolt Thrower and Carcass and, you know, make it slightly lighter like Pantera. But you know, I just loved, you know, just it just needs to be like just full on, and you know, bands like Entombed are definitely my jam. So all those sorts of things. So funnily enough, doing speed tour, and I was always like, for years, I was always like, oh man, I really need to get some like just a filthy, dirty metal band going, just so I could just play metal.
Because
you know, we had sort of snippets of like metal with with 100 Reasons, like little bits and bobs where it went like really light. And it's, you know, it's the thing, like Colin's got a great voice, but he's also got a, like an incredible sort of screaming voice, just like pure volume. It's brilliant. It's like, don't stand too close when he's going full, like full pace for that. But so it's a shame we didn't do anything more sort of shouty, but you know, so yeah, finding myself then joining Raging Speed Tour, not only with our mates, but I was like, oh great, I get to play sort of filthy day ML. So it kind of like, it's definitely scratching that itch for me. We're in a beautiful way, and you know, yeah, it's enjoyable. It's different. It's nice to do different things. It keeps everything fresh for you, I think.
I mean, finally going back to the same things. I mean, how did the reunion happen? You know, recording the record, the tour, that sort of stuff. Was it just an inevitability, do you reckon?
Well, we never say, like, always, like, never say never. And we'd done the 10-year anniversary shows. And they were amazingly successful. And we were literally utterly flawed by the reaction that we got from those shows. And it's kind of funny because I'd played, at that point, I'd been playing for a little while with Freeze the Atlantic and enjoying myself with that. But, you know, like I'd be the first person to admit, not really playing to the biggest crowds. So going back to playing that again and playing this big old crowd, and she walked out in front of this massive crowd going, oh my God, I forgot what it was like to stand in front of this many people again, sort of thing. And it, you know, it really brought it home. So, you know, at one point, a couple of years ago, we had the conversation like, you know, oh, maybe we should try, you know, see what happens, you know. And, you know, Larry had his studio in Brixton. So we would try to go down and see how it came out. And the first sort of writing session that we had, like, we came away with a song that actually is on the album. I won't say which song it is, but it's made its way on the album. And, like, it was, like, all of us went, wow, this actually is, like, you know, we're not just sort of old dudes basically just sort of trying to recapture something. Like, there's actually something here, you know, like we could actually do something decent, you know, because none of us were in any kind of mentality of just sort of going through the motions or just trying to play on the nostalgia or anything like that. Like, it had to be good, you know, for us to be interested and to want to do anything, like anything new and stuff like that. Because it was never anything about like us as people, you know, like we'd always kept in contact and always still close as members. So it was just, so that part was never a problem. It was never like we had to sort some bands having to like rebuild bridges just to make something happen. Do you know what I mean? Like, we never had that problem. So it was literally like, it was like a load of mates getting in a room and seeing what happens. And then luckily for us, what came out of it was like, you know, some great stuff. And we're like, oh wow, okay, I guess we've still got it in a way. So like, so that they kind of steamrolled from there on, really. And so yeah, interesting.
No, absolutely. And I mean, in terms of the rehearsals and getting back into that sort of groove, like the live unit, how's that been going?
I'll tell you when we do it, because we haven't done anything yet.
Oh right.
Yeah, well, the biggest sort of hold up, unfortunately, is Mr. Buse is a resident of California.
That's right, yes.
So it's not the easiest of things. In fact, for recording for this new record, he basically had to record all of his drums in a studio in Los Angeles. So, and Larry had to be on almost like a Zoom call doing it that way. It was remote, but we made it work. So, and I think he sort of absolutely nailed all the drums. And this is coming from his own admission. He hadn't properly touched a drum kit, let alone record or play it properly, like since those anniversary shows. So to the fact that he managed to smash it out of the park, like is very much testament to Mr. Buse. So a little champ.
Is there any like song in particular that you're looking forward most to play live?
Well, obviously I'm interested to be good to play Glorious Sunset, because it's just a great song. So you know, it's a brilliant reintroduction to this band. I didn't realize it was 15 years since we actually released the last records. And it didn't even register that. So when it was posted, oh, the first album in 15 years, I was like, oh, wow, really? It has been that, hasn't it? So, yeah. there's a few tracks on there, but like, well, you know, I don't want to spoil the surprise.
And in our final segment of the whole series, here's Colin with his take on the band's glorious return. I guess, finally then, to conclude, what about the new shows that are upcoming? Obviously, they've been much delayed. You know, I've got my ticket for Birmingham, the 3rd of March, 2023. Can't wait to see you guys finally. You know, how did the organisation come together? And, I mean, obviously, the inevitable delays that have affected it. Like, you know, what sort of impact have they had in general? Like, have you been adding more songs or, you know, only growing tighter?
I think it was something that where we needed to have a reason to play, no pun intended.
Yeah.
And the whole point was to do something probably more about sort of actually play the shows. I think in sort of 20, it's either 2020 or 2021. We were talking about it sort of just before the pandemic. But the thing for us is that if we're going to go out and play the shows, we wanted to go out and play the shows because we were all into the idea. But Larry is very much about, well, it's got to be compelling. We've got to have a reason to do it, so on and so forth. So we weren't trying to build it around 20 years of ideas or anything like that. That was never the intention. Although the shows did look like they were going to be in 2022 at one point. The idea was just go out with some friends and stuff. And again, just go out and play some shows and have a really good time. And then the other answer I'm going to give you is that Larry, again, we were sort of talking with the booking agent, and it's like, well, what can we do? How can we make this into something that's really special and really, really cool? And the deeper discussions came about the fact that we didn't really want to do like, oh, we haven't done anything for a while, here's some shows because we need the money. And it wasn't about that. But when we were talking about the shows, what we really wanted to do was go into a writing room together and see how that panned out first. So me, Larry and the Andy, we did that, and it was amazing and it was awesome. And we hadn't really seen much of each other. We'd hardly talked, really. I mean, I keep in very regular contact with the Andy, but Andy Buse, I speak to every now and then, and he's great, and it's no problem when you do speak to him. And it's the same with Larry. But to sort of, sadly, like Busey couldn't be in the room because he was in America, but we WhatsApped him afterwards and stuff, but we went and we wrote a track, and or maybe we wrote two, but anyway, it was incredible and it went amazingly well. And then we realized, okay, we did another session and it was really, really good. And so the initial kind of idea of going out and playing some shows is now understanding that they're, you know, we've written and recorded a new record. That's like, I would argue, and this is why I kind of said it earlier in the chat, where Curiam was best up to a point, because the new record that we've written is better than anything we've ever done.
Damn.
So the confidence is there for us to go and play some shows and have a good time, but not feel like we're milking an audience, but we're going out to play the shows because we've got something new to play you and it's really fucking good. So
yes.
That's kind of the main thing was the writing was going so well. There was a real sort of bonding between all four of us again as well. Everyone was getting on absolutely amazing. Mm. It was like the best music, the best lyrics, the best melodies. It's everything that's like, you know, it's because no one's stopped being creative. You know, Larry's still a songwriter producer. The Andy writes and plays in Raging Speedhorn. I've done They Fell From the Sky and stuff like that. So no one's stopped making music. But what we haven't done is made music together as 100 Reasons. And when that happens, something very unique happens and something very special happens. And, you know, when there's no pressure, when there's no one breathing down your neck going, got to be done, finish it, get it sorted, da-da-da, that, you know, that magic sort of came back. And it was easy, really easy. So when we do these shows in 2023, we did delay the shows in 2022 because we just couldn't logistically get things together because of COVID. We had too many people that would get sick and then you had to try and find someone else and they couldn't do it or something. You know what I mean? It was so much of a nightmare to make it happen that it wasn't going to happen. So we had to just make that difficult decision to push it to 2023. But what it has done is, you know, because we were already writing the record, but now it's kind of in its finishing stages as I speak to you on this particular date. And yeah, it's pretty special. So it gives a bit of meaning to doing what you're doing.
And, you know, finally, then, you know, one of the really cool things, I mean, obviously you've been in 100 Reasons, Activision, and now you work kind of, you know, I guess on the sort of educational, you know, yeah, Scholastic side, you know, on the business side for production students and performance students in London. And like, that must be so cool as well. Like, do any of your students like talk about 100 Reasons? Does that come up or?
Not too much. Yeah. And really it's because, you know, the students that I currently teach, you know, a lot of them are electronic dance music creators. So it's not necessarily their world. And it's something I don't like to throw at them either.
No.
But they do, they are great students and they do respect what I've done because that's kind of the point. That's kind of why you're in the job and you're teaching that, because you've been there and done that and you've got the experience and you're keeping up to date with it now. So that's kind of the thing. So they do have respect for what I've done. But generally what I normally do is I normally leave the students, you know, with a little bit of what I've done. And then if they want to go and find out a bit more, then they can.
So there you have it, guys. That is the final edition of Live Fast, Die Ugly, the 100 Reasons podcast. Well, I say final edition, I mean, this is the story, essentially. This is the history of the band that we're done with. But there is more coming, as this episode made clear. So potentially there'll be something in the future, perhaps, at a gig. You know, we're still working out the details of that in particular. And, you know, I still need to talk about the music more in depth. And lots of people have emailed me. Lots of fans have got in touch with me. And it's great to hear from you as well. I appreciate that. Lots of people sending their memorabilia, sharing their memories. So it would be good just to do an episode probably reading through some of those emails as well and getting more of a fan perspective on 100 Reasons. So yeah, we will be doing more stuff. But this is, in effect, the close of their story up until the modern day. And it's been a real joy to put together. I, again, want to say a huge shout out to all of the people that I interviewed on the show, everyone that's been listening, So Recordings as well, everyone at the label. It's been so fun, really, putting it together. And, you know, it's been so great as well to put it out there and to have had such a good response. So as ever, this has been Tom Kui. It's tomkui.com if you want to help support me. And go support the band as well. Get tickets, pre-order the album, save the songs to your playlist, tell a friend, share a video, anything, you know, just get the word out there, because we all know how amazing this band is, but more people need to know that as well. So yeah, this has been Tom. I guess just thanks to 100 Reasons as well for being such a legendary outfit and making this podcast what it is. So yeah, go back through the archive, listen to all the episodes again, and until then, bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.